higher performance and faster and more reliable.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Open Paddock episode number 225 for your April Fool's Day 2014. It's open season on all forms of racing that we cover. In IndyCar, we open the season in St. Pete. Power takes some heat on the restart, and PT gets added to the NBC Sports Network commentary team. In Rally, we preview Portugal, Rally America on TV this weekend, and Mike Shaw is going on a road trip. And for Formula One, we have the Malaysian review and more on the engine noise, or lack thereof. So sit back, enjoy the show, and thank you for listening to the Open Paddock Podcast. Okay, good evening, everybody, and welcome. So, yes, after the lengthy intro, Sean joining you this week, finally back after moving. I have reset up Open Paddock headquarters at its new in Garrison location, which is actually just down the base from where I used to live. So I moved like 5 minutes away, and it took me 2 weeks. I don't know how that works, but so I'm back this week to talk all things motorsports. Joining me, obviously, I have Mike Weitzel. Hello, sir.
Good evening, everyone.
And then we have with us, I can't even call him the intern anymore because he gets to do cooler shit than the rest of us. We have Mike Shaw. So hello, Mike. How are you this evening?
Hello. Good evening. I'm a little nervous and excited.
I know. You must be glowing. So we will get to your busy day that will be, if you're listening to the show, it's probably either today or it's already happened. But you do have an exciting opportunity for the 2nd of April with the Global Rallycross Championship, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But let's go ahead and start with some of our miscellaneous topics, if we shall, boys. And that is leading off with a little Formula E.
Isn't it amazing how much news this series makes?
Oh, I know. It's almost like it's living up to its petrol-powered cousin, Formula One. It just makes all kinds of news about dumb stuff that nobody cares about.
Yeah. Fairly interesting. There's been a lot of talk recently about the New York street race or New Jersey street race that F1 continues to fail to secure. And Formula E is very quick to talk with the New Jersey promoters. They are trying very hard to convince New Jersey that they should run a Formula E race instead of F1. And here's their pitch. They don't ask for a hosting fee, but in return, they require a city to provide prime positions for the race, as well as assistance with preparations and introductions to local sponsors. So give us a really good spot, we come and do a race.
And we don't charge you for it.
Yeah, recognizing that our business model is we're going to make the race profitable, and all you have to do is provide the place to run it. Kind of different, and I don't know exactly how they're going to be able to pull that off unless they really are just raking in these sponsors.
Yeah, well, and this is one of the things, when I think about Formula E, or Formula E, as I call it. Here's the thing.
Formula meh.
Yeah. Meh. And when you look at that and you compare it to its cousin, Formula One, I think what you're seeing is the way that we used to do business with Formula One and the way that we do business with Formula E. So with Formula One, you've got Bernie Ecclestone going around and price gouging the hell out of everybody for upwards of $27 million, as was mentioned in this article on GrandPrix.com. And that's obviously lining the pockets of these guys who go out and they build these exotic, awesome race cars, and they deliver, what used to be a phenomenal product. Now we could say just as easily now, well, it's not that good, because of the noise and the dongs and all those things. And then you look at Formula E, and it is more of a, to me anyways, by saying, hey, we'll waive the fee. You just got to give us a good position to introduce us to some cool dudes. It's more of a business-to-business kind of relationship in that sense. It's like, we'll make you profitable. Don't worry about that. But we just want to get introduced to some of your local area sponsors, and we want to get kind of intricate with the business side of it, which is much more what you kind of see these days with the way the business runs, is it's all about the B2B. And so
that's true, but also – you know, from my end, I'm also thinking, is this maybe just a loss leader for this season?
You're probably close to it on that, Mike, because they went out and snatched up these just prime markets. You know, they're going to be in L.A. They're going to be in Miami. They're going to be in Buenos Aires. They're going to be – I mean, they're all – Beijing and all these blue-chip cities around the globe. And – how do you make that happen? Well, they've come up with a business model they think can do it. They've got some funding that's making it a good start.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, I think so. So I like the locations. I think it's like, hey, they're going to all the places that we used to consider like Formula One to be sexy at, or like they're going to the sexy cities, whereas. Formula One's going to third world dumps.
Formula One is in South Korea.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to South Korea on the very edge. This is outside the track. There's a monument. This is where U.S. forces got pushed back in the original Korean conflict of 1953.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I mean, and then you look also at the fact that it's like, oh, and by the way, I don't know if you saw this or not, but you know, we're going to these cool cities, we're getting some pretty good talent, we're getting a lot of people, and Formula One's like, yeah, well, we're going to Azerbaijan. Eh?
Yay.
Eh? Azerbaijan. Let me tell you about the, you know, I like to look at a lot of places. I like to look at a lot of kind of cities and stuff. And let me tell you, Azerbaijan is a just huge, bustling, just melting pot, just waiting to be rich. And by that, I mean nobody has ever said that ever. So,
kind of figured that's where that one was going.
Yeah, so that's just a joke. But anyways, so there we have that. But let's move on to our sports car coverage because there's just not a lot of news that just brims from sports car, yet they're quick to complain when you don't cover them. But Muscle Milk Picket Racing, obviously the ALMS, like, you know, godfathers of prototype racing, and really ALMS's best hope in the prototype category, is going to be taking a break from the season, and they're going to actually skip out on the Long Beach race, and they will be skipping out as well on the Monterey race. And that actually comes off the fact that they're going to do some analysis on what the tire situation, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what we'll call it, tire situation.
Hey, I'm just...
Quote, furthermore, Picket Racing also wants to study how the balance of performance between the Daytona prototypes and the P2 cars pans out over the next couple races. Wonder what's precipitating this.
I have no idea.
I think it's pretty clear. They're not happy with how the first two races have gone and how the very expensive P2 cars have been made to play second fiddle to the Daytona prototypes.
Right. I don't understand why after two races. I mean, okay, you got a little bit closer with Sebring, but they're just so – it just – when I watch the race, even with a couple – you know, with a few prototypes, like I never really feel like the prototype – like obviously Daytona, they got destroyed. But at Sebring, where we were like, okay, this is the potential for the prototypes to come back against the Daytona prototypes and actually do something. And even though the ESM car was close before all this stuff happened and there towards the end of the race, mm-hmm. I never really got the feeling watching the race that the Le Mans P2 was ever going to do anything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just didn't have the power.
Yeah, like you can watch a race and you can be like, okay, so these guys are pretty close. and you're like, this could really go either way. And then there are some races, like the Formula One race this weekend, where you're like, these guys are so far away, like, from everybody else that, like, I don't – that other team, even though they're, like, second place, they're not going to catch them. It was
half
like
– Half a second, a lap.
For example, when it was, like, Vettel was, like, right behind Rosberg, and I was like, oh, man, you know, this is the closest Vettel's been to – anywhere all season. And but at the same point I was like, but he's not gonna pass him. I was like, he's not gonna make the move because the Mercedes is too strong. That's the same way I kind of feel about the Corvette prototypes or any of the Daytona prototypes. It's like, even if the LMP cars get close, they're not gonna do anything. They're gonna get overtaken, you know.
You know, and I think And I think a little bit what's also wrong, reason why they probably chose to skip out on the next couple of them is, well, first of all, you know, before the Tudor sports car rules came out on how they could design their car was what? Wasn't it was supposed to come out in November and they didn't find out until like mid or late January?
Yeah.
You know, so these guys had almost zero testing for the new standards that they were supposed to drive under, you know, as far as suspension requirements, you know, the brake package, the aero. They're sitting there waiting and waiting for the rules to come out, right? So they had hardly any testing to do with that, whereas the Daytona prototypes were hardly changed at all. So there was a disadvantage there to the P2s. They decide, you know, and I'm guessing right now, you know, if those guys in the P2s are you know, trying to say we need more changes so we can be more competitive, and if USCAR isn't willing to make, you know, if they're not getting any headway at all about any proposed changes coming in the near future, then why race?
Yeah. Team owner Greg Pickett. Now, it's interesting to point out, Team Muscle Milk, Greg Pickett, he was talking about bringing his team over to IndyCar in the off season, and remember, they ended up deciding to stay with the Tudor series, thinking that they had better potential for showing well for their sponsor and all that in sports cars. I'm wondering if they're reconsidering that one. But anyway, his comments on
we
this.
We may have made a mistake.
Yeah. His comments on this, and again, quote, additionally, while we did some laps at Sebring, the speed differential between the DP cars and the P2s is still quite big, and I want to see what the series does with the with that over the course of the next couple of races, as these will take place at tracks that should favor the P2 cars. We came here to be competitive, and we know that we have the drivers in the car to do so, but a big part of that competitiveness comes down from the balance of performance, and you can't be fighting for wins if you're not on a level playing field. You can't argue with him. And for a team that's spending a lot more money on their car than those Daytona prototypes, please tell me what the incentive is.
Yeah. And this is the problem that everybody feared could happen with the sports car championship and the rules, is you're taking radically different machines and making them fight against each other. And again, NASCAR owns it, and the NASCAR, you know, the NASCAR people have not really made any changes to the other cars. So it's like, okay, so what, you know, I just don't understand why you would do that in terms of like why you would. I mean, these problems are going to happen, and you didn't think it out very well, obviously. So like, you know, I guess just what are you going to do? You know what I mean? Like, what are you going to do? Because teams are already jumping ship and not wanting to compete because you're not doing anything, and they don't have a sense that anything's going to happen in the at the end of the day that's going to level the playing field or do any of that. So what are you going to do?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, let's talk about some sports car racing that we care a little bit more about, or at least I do. And that would be World Challenge. They ran their first event at St. Petersburg this past weekend. Now, the thing to note is that the first race was rained out.
That was a freaking deluge. They had everybody running under tents. They actually they cleared all the grandstands because the thunderstorm's coming through.
Yeah.
It was pretty dangerous to be out there.
But they did get out there for race two. It went about 32 laps, the top runners in the class. However, the winner of it was Thomas Enge, and the Lamborghini Gallardo.
Very
nice.
Indeed. Andy Pilgrim and Cadillac CTSV was second, and third was Andrew Palmer in one of the Audi R8s. Very cool.
Yes.
GTS class, Lawson Aschenbach won in a Chevy Camaro, followed by Andy Lee in a Chevy Camaro, and followed by Jack Baldwin in a Porsche Cayman.
Nice.
I got to do a little bit of shout-out in the GTS class for eighth position, David Sterix, Rally America driver.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. He is actually going to be driving the series under the Always Evolving banner. If you remember Paul Walker from the Fast and the Furious series before he passed away in that tragic car wreck, he was a big member of that, or he was a partner with a friend of his. Always Evolving was their car shop that they had. Machine shop and whatnot, and they did all kinds of custom designs and whatnot. And so Always Evolving is big, has always been really big in motorsports. Actually, one thing Paul Walker always said is he wanted to do more driving, and he got sick of the movies because they were doing more CG and not enough driving. But after him and his friend passing, those two guys were the ones that were running Always Evolving. They needed a driver, and David Sterix is actually a friend of theirs. And he got the opportunity to drive for him, and so he ended up eighth place in the Mustang Boss 302Fs. So congratulations for him, and I'll be excited to watch him throughout the season.
Yeah, the only other thing that I do want to point out from the World Challenge event was that K-Pax was out there with their new McLaren 12Cs, and Alex Figge ended up finishing eighth. His brand new teammate, Robert Thorne, after lap nine was out with a mechanical issue. So that'll be some teething pains as they come up to speed with that new platform. So
those GT cars are so cool, though.
They are. I mean, they're roughly GT3 spec.
Mm-hmm.
GT3 cars, full GT3 cars are being brought over to run in the series, and they're being homologated to run in the series. Very cool, though. Very cool. I think that's it for the miscellaneous section of the podcast. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's it. So that gets us into the drinks roll call. Not much we can do quickly. A quick break. I had a Dr. Pepper.
Oh, yeah. Won't you be a pepper too?
I know, right? I had to stay away from anything alcoholic because on Friday, I went out to treat one of my friends who had helped me move throughout the week, and him and his wife had done some pretty clutch moving of some heavy objects.
And Sean just sobered up this morning.
Yeah. Well, it started when she told me that they had PBR on draft.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, yes.
Oh, man, really?
And I had a few of those, and by a few of those, I mean they were like these, like, they were bigger than the Brutus cups. They were huge. So it was probably about a six-pack of PBR with dinner. And then we went to the bar, like, that was attached, because it was just an Applebee's. So then we went down because somehow we got the genius idea that we needed to do some shots. And after some, Jameson's Irish whiskey, tequila.
You now
Patron.
Can remember the rest of what happened.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tequila Patron. And then obviously we had a Budweiser to wash it down. Which is a bad choice. I went from being, hey, this is a pretty pleasant evening to, oh my God. And I'm like stumbling through my house. I sent a tweet. I couldn't even see my screen. So, yeah, something went horribly wrong in the planning process. So I'm just gonna back away from alcohol beverages for like a week and let that settle. So, but that's not to stop you guys from enjoying. So, Mr. White, so what are you enjoying?
I'm having a tankard of Arrogant Bastard this evening.
A tankard.
And I got a new mug, and this thing is just awesome. You know, it's this thick ceramic, you know, hand spun and all that kind of stuff. And it was sitting in the freezer for a while today to prepare it for receiving said drink. And it's quite fine. However, it was funny. The local Daily Growler is a local craft bar, basically. They have 60 craft brews on tap. When they run out of a keg, they kick it and put something completely different in. So it's this constantly rotating stock. They said their Daily Growler special for the day was Natty Light.
Oh, God.
It was an April Fool's joke.
Jeez.
Anyway, Mike.
Yes.
What you drinking?
I'm having a Pyramid Thunderhead IPA tonight.
Ooh.
Little hoppy, kind of good. It's kind of mellow. It's not super strong. But I needed a little beverage to help me sleep tonight. So.
Nice.
Oh, there you go. So, all right. Well, let's talk about some IndyCar. We're going to review the weekend that was St. Pete. So we put up a couple little articles throughout the weekend leading into it. I think that's typically how it's going to be from here on. It will be kind of a – we'll front load you with some articles, if you will, going into the weekend. And then we'll probably wait until the podcast to do any kind of review or anything, official review, because it just doesn't make sense to write about it and then turn around and talk about it. And not everybody all the time listens to the podcast, but you know what? Maybe they should to get that review. So let's just start off with the St. Petersburg news, because, like, obviously we knew the race was coming. There were still some questions to be asked leading into the weekend, and that one of them was answered very late in the form of the to-be-announced car that had been associated with Dale Coyne, almost in its own little kind of April's Fool's joke, where we're like, well, who's going to be in this thing? So we kind of waited for a while, and then on Thursday afternoon, as we got into the festivities of St. Pete and it was hitting that boiling point, we found out that it was Carlos Hortez who was confirmed in the second car, a.k.a. – well, he's the guy who had been testing for Panther during the off season before he kind of got the snub. And then all of a sudden he winds up at Coyne. Mr. Hortez, your check has cleared. We have it for you over here at the number 18 car. So it's like, you know, it seemed like when you go to the amusement park and you pay to do the go-kart racing, and you're like, oh, man, I can't wait. And then you, like, get in, and they're like, sir, could you please get on the number 2 car? And you're like, oh, man, Rusty Wallace, Blue Deuce. You know, maybe not with that kind of enthusiasm, but, you know, that's pretty much what Mr. Hortez, that's what I thought of. So, but Carlos Hortez is in the number 18 seat, and he did compete this weekend. So quick turnaround for the young lad. And that actually brought us into the qualifications, actually. Now, there was a lot of buzz down at St. Petersburg. A lot of guys down there, J.R. Hildebrand was tooling around. Our friend Martin Plowman was down there hanging out with his buddy Takuma Sato, his teammate for the month of May, as he's going to be running in the Grand Prix of Indianapolis as well as the 500. And so he was down there hanging out with Takuma Sato and A.J. Foyt Racing just in time for Takuma Sato and A.J. Foyt Racing to capture pole position after kind of a quirky little qualifying session that nobody got to watch, by the way, because of ABC. And the weather was kind of had been an issue there and caught some people out. But yeah, we had Takuma Sato taking the very first, very first pole position for the Verizon IndyCar Series, but it was a Verizon P1 award for him, which he is, of course, no stranger to, as Sato was fast last year during qualifying as well.
Yeah. Indeed.
So, that was a great qualifying run that he did there. It was awesome to see him at the front.
Oh, he was flying. His lap was blistering. He had been quick all weekend in practice as well. And then he, like, when it was time to go, he just laid down the gauntlet. Now, actually, it's really funny, not to discount him, but if you go to the NBC Motorsports site, their little blog, where they stamp out like 75 stories a day. Few, maybe marginal amount of the posts are actually substance versus just numbers. But this particular one, talking about the qualifying for St. Pete, you actually see Martin Plowman in his A.J. Foyt gear, standing behind A.J. Foyt of all people, so that's kind of cool. I just noticed that when I was checking out the article here. But yeah, so Mr. Plowman was in force down in St. Petersburg, repping that A.J. Foyt colors. So Sato was on pole position. Again, we had some quirky stuff. Another guy who was fast all weekend was Graham Rahal. He didn't make it very far because of some issues. I actually was on – I know this is going to be impossible for you guys to understand. I was on the Rahal bandwagon this weekend. Something about him, like something about all the tweets. I don't know if it's just the way that he tweets, if it was everybody else tweeting for him, maybe everybody that he was retweeting who was tweeting him. But like, I just had this feeling when I was
watching. Are you sure you weren't still hungover from Friday?
Very realistic possibility that I was.
Okay, just making sure.
Warm, fuzzy feeling for Graham Rahal. Yep.
Yeah, but I thought he was going to do something fantastic this weekend. And it started in practice, but then in qualifying, he had some issues where he had put the car in the tires and had his lap disqualified. So he was out pretty early. Kimball, Hinchcliffe, Montoya, all guys who – Pagano, all these guys eliminated in round one, and this is when we're talking about some kind of sketchy conditions and sketchy stuff happening on course where people are losing their laps. At the end of the day, your fast six was obviously your pole setter, Takuma Sato, followed by Tony Kanaan. When the hell has he been on the front row in a road course? I don't remember. And he even made jokes about that, so, you know, it's cool. You know, we're cool. We're not talking garbage. Hunter Ray was third. Will Power, fourth. Defending series champion Scott Dixon was fifth. And then Marco Andretti put in a solid qualifying performance and started P6. So it seemed like everything was going to be fantastic for the Andretti guys, who a lot had been made about Andretti and their kind of getting back with Honda and this new power plant, the fact that the Honda was a new, dual turbocharged engine, basically. So there was a lot of, conversation, obviously, about that. And it was good to see that they actually put together a pretty good show in qualifying, had some speed. But at the end of the day, new faces, new teams, new everything for a new season, but we still have the same kind of story, and that was Will Power opening the season with a dominant victory at St. Petersburg, which was a relatively event-free race. It was a really good car race. It was just a good motorsport event. Not a lot of crashes, not a lot of stupid debauchery that IndyCar, as I said in my as I said in my constructive criticism post, IndyCar, all their problem is they shoot themselves in the face all the time with stupid decisions on track and stupid rule book infringements and everything. And it was good to just not see that it just wasn't a problem this weekend. Now, there was some issue with a little bit of what race control was doing, and we'll get into that here. But for the most part, the first race of the season, which you usually think, drivers out there driving in anger with other cars for the first time, clearly there's going to be some calamity in turn one and some nonsense like that. And for the most part, everybody was pretty clean and pretty professional. I mean, it was straightforward, just an interesting car race. And
what I found interesting is, it's really trying to see how it's going to play out between the Honda and the Chevy, power plants, especially those teams that just switched. And, I figured that Honda maybe they wouldn't get the mileage, even though they had the speed, and that proved not to be the case. Sato, I think, was the last one to pit out of that first round of pit stops. He waited until who was behind him? Was it Power? Yeah, I guess it was Power that was behind him, wasn't it? And he waited until everybody else was pitting before he even made a chance to even go in the pits, and he was running lean by then.
Yeah.
So they definitely got the mileage and the speed to hold them out there for a while.
Yeah, it was the engine performed well. So I was excited to see that the engine parity was what we thought it was going to be after qualifying. Not one engine came out and really dominated the other in terms of power. I think that the driver was just the better driver. The car was just better set up. You know, Penske runs well at St. Pete. I mean, Castroneves won last year, and that guy's not known for his road racing prowess. So, you know, there's some sketchy stuff I think that happened last year that prevented Power from winning. But the one point that we do have to talk about, and it's a 7,000-pound elephant in the room, and that is that there was some controversy at the beginning of the restart.
The first
little restart there. To respond to, I think that was Kimball.
Yeah, Kimball straight-lined it in turn one.
Yeah, Kimball straight-lined in turn one, bounced off the tires, couldn't get the car going exactly where he wanted to go. But then Will Power on the subsequent restart caused some issues, or at least perceived to cause some issues, when he took the field down to at a very slow pace, and some of the cars in the back expected him to go. Some thought maybe he had brake checked, but at the end of the day, some cars kind of got out of control. Jack Hawksworth kind of got a little overeager. And had to apply some heavy braking, which seen him go into the wall, but not.
I think he used Marco as his brake.
Yeah, exactly. He hit the brakes. He lost control of his car. Collects Marco Andretti, who had been languishing in the back all day.
He also hit somebody on his left, and I couldn't figure out who that was.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did tag another car, so he pinballed off a few cars and a wall, collected a couple pretty, you know, if you ask Marco Andretti, one terrible race car and one other race car that probably didn't have any business leading, but at the same point in time, it was just a really, the moment where everybody was like, man, that was really sketchy. Here comes the hate spears. I kind of didn't know. Like, I was like, you know, that was, to me, it seemed kind of sketchy. Like, it just seemed like something that you probably shouldn't do when you're restarting a race. But then again, when you look at the letter of the law, like, they were not supposed to restart until they got into the little cone zone, if
acceleration
you will.
Cone zone.
And
the
then
cone zone, which they moved on the morning of the race to a position farther away from the corner to try and have more cars on the front stretch before, you know, everybody went.
Right. So technically what Will Power did was actually more correct than what the people farther back were doing.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, what I found so interesting actually about this whole thing is after the race was over, is to hear, you know, Will Power's rivals such as Scott Dixon, you know, those guys that were in that first five that were totally fine. Every
Dixon,
single one of them said that, you know what, he did everything right. That I,
except
you know,
Elliot.
Yeah, maybe he let off the gas a little bit, but you know what, that's fine. He didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, well. Will basically said, yeah, I let off the gas because Elio had popped out a line and he shouldn't have done that. And I just popped, you know, let off the gas to kind of accentuate the fact that he needed to be behind me. You know, it's clearly what he said he did.
Yep.
You can argue about whether that's good or bad sportsmanship. However, what can be said is it was legal.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
There is some question as to race control was waving the green flag before Will Power even got anywhere remotely near the cone zone. And as soon as that green flag waves, all the teams are going green, green, green to their drivers who can't see anything in front of them because they're lined up single file. And they're all popping out and making a run, similar to what Graham Rahal did on the initial start of the race and gained, you know, like half the field in positions.
Oh, I know.
That's right.
One would say that was like, of questionable legality there.
I was like, oh, man, he's going to do it. He's going to make me a genius.
So I can understand people not being happy with Willpower on this, but I the track form vitriol against Willpower is just a bit too much. It really was a racing incident, and there were a lot of mitigating factors. So, yeah.
Well, and didn't they also, you know, stress in the driver's meeting before the event that you cannot accelerate until acceleration zone?
Yep.
And so they really wanted to stress that, you know, especially after last year in where was that? I'm trying to remember where it was, where the whole issue with acceleration zone. I think it was 2 years ago. I'm thinking of. Anyway, but anyhow, So I mean, he's obviously following what they told him to do. The fact that the green flag came out early, I don't know what you do about that. Maybe that guy's just paid minimum wage. I don't know.
You mean he makes like $20 an hour now?
Right. Jeez. Right.
Oh, sorry.
what? I don't know, guys. What does have to be said is the double file restart was taken away. They're not going to be doing double file restarts at road and street course events this year. I couldn't discern, are they going to do them at ovals other than Indy? Because they didn't do them at Indy, but they did them everywhere else, didn't they, last year on the ovals? But yeah, well. Anyway, they've taken that away, and that's why they're stressing about the cone zone and everything like that. They want to make sure that they make the single file restarts as successful as possible, as exciting as possible, and as little cheating as possible on those. So, can understand the stress in the driver's meeting there.
Well, let's talk about – well, let's go ahead and move on, I guess I should say, to one of the pleasant surprises that kind of got a bad draw of the straw, if you will. That was one Mike Conway, who is racing for Ed Carpenter Racing. As you remember, he will be competing on the road and street courses while Ed competes primarily on the ovals, because Mike Conway obviously is retired from any and all forms of oval racing. And, you know, usually the Fuzzies car is something that we see at the back, kind of tooling around, like, I don't know, six laps off the pace, because Ed Carpenter, bless his soul, can't really drive road courses that well anymore, if ever. And, but he brought in Mike Conway to help develop the road and street course portion of the team, and it looked as though the Ed Carpenter boys were going to get a race result that seen them on at least on the podium, if not challenging for the victory, I think, because Conway was a man on the mission. He was putting in some great lap times and some great performances on the track until the safety car miscommunication heard round the world, where there was a slight jack up on communication there on exactly what was happening, and one Mike Conway suffered dearly. Mike, could you perhaps elaborate on that?
He when the whole issue with the safety car came out after the restart, which, you know, caused all the issues, Conway's team didn't call him down pit road. At least he said he didn't hear them call him down pit road. So that was a miscommunication that caused all the issues. But then when Conway was out on the track with all the other lapped cars, okay, because that's how they do it, they'll peel off all the lead lap cars to run down pit lane first. And then the following lap, they'll peel off all the lapped cars. And, you know, that's basically their way of doing kind of a funny little wave around. And while they're following the pace car around the track to come back to the pit so the wave around cars can, you know, get into pit, they're getting waved past the safety car so that the safety car can then pick up the front of the field. Ed's car went ahead and tried to take that wave around, which he wasn't entitled to, which caused a penalty. You know, made things a little bit less interesting for him.
Yeah, that was a tough thing. I mean, he was performing very well, and to have that kind of happen to him just kind of sucked. But, yeah, I mean, he's still getting back in the groove of things, and just got to pay attention.
Yeah, he was running top three at times, so
yep.
That's some pretty heady territory. That car's going to do well with him this season. Look for Long Beach to be look for him to be placing very well at Long Beach.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was funny too when Scott Goodyear was even making jokes about himself about the pace car. They were like, "Oh, you know something about this, don't you?" And he's like, "I think it was Cheever was busting his chops about it." So it was pretty funny.
I must say, what I did, I just had to just kind of, I had the TV on, but because earlier I had to get the lawn mowed before the rain came again over here in Oregon,
mm-hmm.
and the first mowing of the year, you know. So I had been listening to the IndyCar, the IMS radio, and to hear Paul Page. Oh man, that just brought back some happy memories. And hearing him on IMS, I'm like, you know what? This is like when I used to watch the basketball games, and I'd mute the TV and turn on over here in Oregon 1190 KEX. We listened to Bill Shonley, and he has that classic, you know, voice for announcing, play by play stuff. And and that was the same kind of thing, you know, Paul Page and the crew just. It was so much better just to mute the TV. Yeah, there was a little bit of a delay, but I was so much happier listening to IMS radio versus listening to Scott Goodyear.
Yeah.
Right.
See, and it's kind of interesting. This is the first time we've got to hear the NASCAR announcer, Alan Bestwick, do an IndyCar race, and I didn't find him off-putting at all. I found him quite enjoyable. What I did find off-putting was Scott Goodyear and his non-bromance that he has going with Eddie Cheever. But you could hear Eddie just disagreeing with him on just about everything he said. It was great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of Eddie Cheever doing this either. So Alan Bestwick is going to be holding the torch for ABC this year. But I do think the booth is better than it was last year.
I think so. I thought Bestwick made them kind of raise their game, if you will.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed watching it. I thought the coverage was pretty good. Yeah, but Goodyear is a little
meh. So,
yeah, I mean I heard him go into his normal explanations. Now what you're seeing here is it's like, oh stop.
Somebody shut this man up.
They have a button they push on the steering wheel, and they only have 10 of these per race. And shut up!
It's like, not everybody's a noob all the time, Cheever. Even you should probably know that the only people watching this race right now are people who've watched IndyCar for like the last 20 years. Yeah. Shut the hell up, dude.
Yeah, and I think the preliminary Nielsen numbers put the rating at a 0.6, down from a 1.1 last year.
Ouch.
Yeah, that hurts.
How does that happen?
It depends what it's up against. I mean, your NCAA tournament time, maybe it didn't exactly fall that way last year. Who knows?
I don't know. Well, let's get into the results. It goes a little bit like this. Obviously, Will Power took the win with Hunter Ray and Castro Neves rounding out the podium. Solid performance by both Scott Dixon and Simon Pagenaud. Kanaan had a disappointing day, falling from second to sixth. Takuma Sato, even more disappointing, falling from first to seventh. Then Wilson, good showing for Joseph Newgarden, that Sarah Fisher Hartman. She's like Winkman. I don't even know anymore. They got so many of these damn names on the car. And then 10th place, Ryan Briscoe coming back into the Ganassi fold. So, that was a bit of an interesting, race weekend. It's good to have IndyCar back on track regardless. And actually have cars on track and battling it out and putting on a pretty damn good show from what I could tell. Really disappointed in the numbers now that I'm hearing that for the TV numbers, but
yeah, I guess. And I do have to say, you know, the rookies didn't make a big name for themselves in this race. Jack Hawksworth got involved in an understandable incident. He was involved in an accordion, and that's an understandable incident. Carlos Huertas, you know, he finished. Carlos Munoz, he finished. Mikel Elation, he finished. Pretty good deal for that. And, you know, when you do look at the final results, you see a Colombian takeover in the IndyCar standings, because Juan Pablo Montoya, Carlos Huertas, Carlos Munoz, and Sebastian Saavedra all have that nationality. So kind of a takeover there. What about Juan Pablo Montoya? Did we hear much from him this weekend?
He performed pretty pittily.
I'd say he performed pretty much where we should expect him to perform, at least early.
Yeah,
and he said himself he didn't want to be, you know, he wasn't going to try and challenge for the win so much. You know, he was like getting back into the car. It's a whole new chassis for him. He's been away from it so long, and
kinda,
yeah.
You mean kind of like, you know, what he's been doing in NASCAR for the last decade?
Pretty much. Oh, and by the way, apparently he wants to be known as Juan Montoya now, not Juan Pablo.
Yes, he won more as Juan Montoya, is what he said to somebody.
Oh, that's so fine. Go for Juan Montoya. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Back in the day, bringing me back to, what, 2000?
Yeah, indeed. Juan has fully mounted his teammates. You sit on the bench.
Let's see. Well, some other news post St. Pete. It looks like Chip Ganassi is considering. Oops, don't know what I just did there to the paper. My fault. But Chip Ganassi is considering running Sage Karam for Indianapolis. He was not. They tried to draw him into some answering of the questions, but he would have none of it. He said, basically, I can't say that nothing's happening, but I'm not going to say nothing's happening. Or I can't say that something's happening, but I'm not going to say nothing's happening. So kind of thrown it in the air. I think that if push comes to shove and the field needs another car, I think that we could see easily see Sage Karam in there, which is interesting when you look at Ganassi, because Ganassi is not one of those guys who really, I
he
guess,
doesn't go after
this.
He doesn't go after development drivers, and especially at Indy.
Yeah,
exactly. He usually, you know, now one could say, well, Charlie Kimball, but, you know, okay, so you need a driver for your satellite team. You bring in Kimball with pretty good sponsorship, whatever, you can run him. But when you look at it, I mean, you had Graham Rahal in the other car at the time. You had, obviously, Franchitti and Dixon in the car. We've not really seen anybody since probably Juan Montoya get put into the car who's, like, so young. And not necessarily I guess.
Well, talk about young. He's a freaking high school senior.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy's a high school senior. And they're like, hey, how would you like to come race in the Indy 500? It's like, what? What
did yeah, exactly.
What did that do wrong?
But you know what? What's fascinating about Sage Karam, he actually was on IMS radio for a little bit during the Indy Lights race. And, boy, what a mature kid.
Yeah.
Well, that kid, it talks like he's been doing this all his life, which, okay, he probably has since, you know, karting early days and stuff, but he's just very fascinating. It's just how calm he is and the way he analyzes everything. And if there's somebody that deserves a shot at that age, it's probably him.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've been saying for Sage ever since the days that he and Veach kind of came onto the Andretti Autosport scene together. I mean, we had talked with Sage on a podcast episode when he was with Andretti Autosport. I believe it was when he was with Star in the Pro Mazda. Well, I think it was Star Mazda at the time. I can't recall. But he was just talking to him. It was so refreshing to hear such a young man with so much knowledge. And not only just knowledge, but just so much passion to not only about racing, but being successful at racing and the way his methods to the madness was just really refreshing. And, you know, you'll see a high school senior go out there, but in terms of maturity level and just all of that, I mean, you got a guy who's probably more qualified than half the guys that are running full time out there. So it's interesting to see. And I think that if Ganassi is going to take a development driver and try this Indy project by putting him in a car, I think Sage Karam is the best fit and really speaks to Sage Karam's ability behind the wheel, that somebody like Chip Ganassi is going to go out of his way to try and put together a ride for him. So he must have been quite impressive at those sports car races talking to the boss man. So, but good stuff there, and I really hope, because I'd love to go to Indianapolis to see Martin Plowman run in the 500 and a driver like Sage Karam. I think it adds a lot of strength to the field to have such a knowledgeable and skilled rookie in the car. Moving on to some other news in IndyCar, Brazil, obviously missing this year on the calendar, and a lawsuit had been filed by IndyCar against the race promoters because it was deemed that they needed to come up with there's some road construction that was going to shut down part of the course. They needed to come up with a suitable replacement venue for IndyCar to run on the schedule, and they did not. They said that they were going to have to cancel the 2014 race. The lawsuit ensued, but both IndyCar and Brazil are hoping that 2015 can be a change, if you will, where the series goes back to Sao Paulo and races on the street course there. So,
actually, it's not Sao Paulo that they're talking about. Sao Paulo is one of the options. Here's the thing. They have a contract until like 2018 to continue running in Brazil.
Yep.
So it has to continue happening, or there's going to be a big settlement. So they're looking for alternate venues. I think that Sao Paulo is not coming back. One of the venues that's been brought up is the Autódromo Nelson Piquet.
Nice. Okay.
Internacional features. It's a 12-turn, 3.4-mile anti-clockwise layout. And that they're considering upgrading that to be able to host next year. There was even talk about possibly running a Brazilian race towards the end of the season this year, but nothing has ever panned out on that. I think that there just wasn't enough time to really get it off the ground and have a good date. They are saying that they are shooting for a date of March 8th next year at Nelson Piquet.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So, yeah, I must have misread that.
Yeah.
They do want to go back to Brazil, just not that weird track, that weird shifty kind of street circuit that always kicked up the dust.
Yeah, nice track, though. I love that straight. Love that straight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it looks so awesome with, like, the walls and the flags and the little building. I mean, that's cool stuff. All right, so... what's going on here? Okay, so, sorry, technical difficulties on the old laptop. It's being less than cooperative this evening. But new director named for the Aero development here in IndyCar, Mike. So tell us a little bit about this, and what's this going to do for our Aero kits?
That's exactly what it is. This guy's the new director of aerodynamic development. They needed somebody to oversee this, and they brought in Tino Belli, and he is most recently technical director at Panther Racing. So that probably means that he's going to be involved in a lawsuit here pretty soon. Did I say that?
Oh.
But anyway, he's going to be overseeing this whole aero kit process as Chevy and Honda start providing aero kits. So, it's going to be really interesting to see this introduction and how much development they're allowed to do, because this is a big piece. I mean, you look at how much money in Formula One goes into development of aero. Between the CFD design, the computational fluid dynamics design, using massive amounts of computer horsepower and data centers and all that.
Wind tunnel testing, all of it. Yep.
The wind tunnel testing and then getting out on the track. And if you, you know, if you're watching, testing at Bahrain, before the season started, you know, they had all these little, these airflow measurement devices that were basically hanging off the top of the car or over this part of the car or whatever, as they're just trying to fully understand what's going on with a vehicle. And there's potential that this could get out of hand. And I think that that's why they want to make sure that they have people in place before it really gets started to put a check on that from going crazy. So. Mm.
All right, well, that's acceptable.
Indeed.
All right, well, let's talk about NBC. NBC Sports Network has announced some new on-air talent for the IndyCar series. And obviously we talked earlier about Paul Tracy being on that team. So who all do we have talking IndyCar with us? I think Paul Tracy was, what, a six-event deal?
Yeah, jeez, was it six events?
Yeah, I think he was six events, and then there was another fella.
Yeah, Kelly Stavast is also going to join. She's part of the TV program, the NASCAR TV program that they do on NBCSN, and also serves on their daily sports wrap-up program as well. So she's basically a network personality that they're trying to bring in to IndyCar racing as well. So interesting to see that. I think the thing that we're going to have to watch is when you get Paul Tracy and Robin Miller together, there's going to be so much groupthink going on. Robin Miller joygasms on the air about Paul Tracy being part of the broadcast. I don't know, man. This is...
Hey, Paul, you were so good in the car. Welcome to the booth where I'm sure you're going to be even better.
Take off your helmet so I can punch you.
Yes.
I was a little leery of this because it was this article was published by IndyCar today, April 1st. So, you know, that is kind of interesting, but you know, Paul Tracy's been such an interesting figure in IndyCar racing for a long time. From his very celebrated run-ins with IMS management when he was saying he won the 500 and Elio, you know, did, I guess. They're not on the best speaking terms, and Paul went off and claimed that he would never run IndyCar again and then kind of came back after it was the only game in town.
Well, you see what happened there was I was never going to do it again, but then you get the other guys lost everything.
Yeah.
So, so that's good to have Paul Tracy on there. I'm sure, like, you know, like most drivers, he'll bring a great sense of, you know, kind of what's going on, much better than I think. I don't know, Scott Goodyear.
He'll be better than Goodyear. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm excited for that. So, but next up, guys, is the iconic Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach. So that's 2 weeks away.
Sweet.
So exciting times, exciting times. So, but let's get into the Mazda Road Indy because we are getting down to that section. It has been quite a bit of show already, and we're not even like halfway done, guys. So let's get into the Mazda Road Indy. Now, Doug's not here tonight, as I'm sure you probably heard. He will be joining us next week. He's got an SCCA meeting this week, and we actually have our first round of the SCCA championship coming up, so kind of excited about that. So Doug's out squaring that away, taking into consideration all the different things that must be done before prepping for the championship. But we will talk about Zach Veach winning the Indy Lights race after qualifications had been rained out for that event and that deluge that we had previously talked about. Veach spending another season in the Indy Lights, not the Firestone Indy Lights, I don't think anymore.
Presented by Cooper Tire.
Yes, Indy Lights presented by Cooper Tires. I apologize if I said Firestone Indy Lights earlier. So, the Indy Lights presented by Cooper Tires. Zach Veach strikes first blood this season and takes a cracking victory.
Did you happen to watch this or listen to it on IMS?
Sadly, I did not because I was moving. And I tried to keep up with it, but my phone was kind of cutting in and out, so I was having a hard time keeping with the race. So why don't you did you follow the race though, right?
I did as much as I could, and it was actually really kind of there's a select three drivers that were just above and beyond caliber of the rest. It was Zach Veach, Gabby Chavez, who was on the pole, and Matty Brabham. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of known that they'd probably be the top three amongst the others. But far and away, right from the start, Zach Veach got a run on Gabby at the drop of the green flag and just went around him and was able to hold his line and ended up taking the lead right there from the onset. Gabby, unfortunately, just couldn't catch up to him. Matty Brabs was really trying to catch up. He was getting close. He was a little bit back from them, but as he was trying to get closer, he got just a little too aggressive and ended up scrubbing the wall and bent his suspension a bit. And that kind of was it for him. And he wasn't done. He ended up coming in, and they just changed the tires, and he ended up being a bit slow. He could still drive, but... car wasn't up to full pace, so and from then on it was just Veach and Chavez half a lap ahead of everybody else throughout the whole race. Yeah, it was significant, and just Chavez just didn't quite have enough to overcome Zach. Zach actually stretched his lead by a little bit every lap. He was just on the money, just again, just for such a young kid, he's just so good. Yep. And it'll be interesting how the rest of the season plays out. But good on him. He did a great job.
Mm. Well, that's great. So good. Now, Doug obviously will be back next week to talk all things Mazda and Mazda Road to Indy from St. Petersburg. So I look forward to that review from Doug. And we will talk with him then, and he will bring you everything that you want to know. But now, Mr. Shaw, I'm going to keep it with you, and we're going to go into the rally section of this show, because we did have a couple little events going on over the weekend, and we got a couple coming up, and you're going on a road trip tomorrow, so please tell us all about it.
Yeah, so first thing this last weekend was the third round of the European Rally Championship. They were in Acropolis Rally, which the Rally of Greece, which used to be part of the WRC, but has now shifted over to the ERC. And it was also the debut of Peugeot's new 208 T16 R5. So Peugeot was working on a development of an R5 car to compete with that new homologation that Ford's had their R5 since mid last year or something like that. Mm-hmm. I believe Citroën's working on an R5, and so is Skoda. Craig Breen and Kevin Aubring were the two factory drivers for Peugeot debuting that car out there. And right from stage one, they just dominated. If you remember Brian Bouffier, he was out there as well. He was in a Citroën DS3 RRC, which is basically a WRC car with a little bit bigger restrictor and less aero to slow the car down a little bit. But it's got all the strength and stuff that you would have in a full WRC car because it's got all the other components. Where these R5s are a little bit more factory-ish in that respect. But the 208 T16 performed admirably. Bouffier ended up getting a puncture at one point, slowed him down just a little bit. and, you know, he tried to catch back up, but really he didn't have anything to catch up to Green. Aubring ended up having an issue with his engine where it was leaking fluid, but those problems didn't happen to Craig Green. So Craig Green, the Irishman, if you remember, he's the one that lost his best friend and co-driver in a rally accident a couple of years ago. And everyone was wondering whether he'd ever race again. And the family are the ones that said, we want you to continue on. And he teamed up with a new co-driver. He's had a couple of different ones over the years, but Scott Martin was on his side this time, and they just kept dominating, winning stage after stage throughout the event. What was really interesting to see about this one was there was the Fiesta R5, a Peugeot T16 R5, there was the RRC Citroen out there, and then there was the older, you know, Skoda S2000 that used to dominate.
It used to be
European Rally Championship, right?
Yeah, it used to be unstoppable, that car.
Exactly. And that was under Sepp Weigand was in one of those, and he ended up going out with a suspension issue. And then Esa-Pekka Lappi was the Finnish driver, the faster than God guy. Well, wasn't fast enough because he was hitting that rev limiter constantly and just. Apparently, the Skoda tops out at about 175 kilometers an hour, whereas the R5s can go 200.
So it was faster than God, but the car was not.
Right, there you go. Well said, well said. It was definitely interesting, like I said, to see the different cars, manufacturers, really getting involved and behind their cars and duking it out there. But Craig Breen got his first victory ever. In the ERC, he's been waiting to do that for a couple of years now. First one for him as a factory driver for Peugeot, and first for the brand new outing of the T16 R5. So, congratulations to them. That was awesome. Bouffier ended up in second in the DS3 RRC, and then third was the Fiesta R5 of, and I'm going to murder the name here because he's a Polish driver, Kajetanowicz or something like that. Yeah, I'm sorry.
You know what? Your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah, there you go. And Lappi ended up in the S2000 in fourth, but he was over a minute and a half back, so if that tells you anything. So the S2000s, as you can tell, are just going to fade off into the distance. What's funny, though, is the S2000s actually cost more than these R5s do.
Oh,
you remember when they used to be like, oh, the S2000, the future.
Right.
It's been like 3 years later and they're irrelevant.
Yep. The other event that was this weekend, which is always, always a classic. So WRC is going to be going to Portugal this week, but there's always an event the weekend before the WRC event, and it's called the Fafe Rally Sprint. And it's an old stage from back in the day, like you think of the Group B era. Mm-hmm. It's farther north where more of the population is. The WRC, for the most part, does farther south in Portugal these days. But being farther north there, the crowds are insane. Nice. I heard an estimate of a million people watching.
What?
That might be a little much. But that's I can tell you there were tens of thousands of people lining the stages. That's not fantastic. In the road like they used to in the Group B days where they were all going to get killed. they're up on the hillsides and whatnot, but lining the entire stage. It's about 6.7 kilometers, so it's a short sprint. They do two passes through it, and it is just cool to watch. And they had live streaming of it. It was in Polish, so you kind of just you got to watch the cars, but you couldn't quite understand what all they were saying. But surprise, surprise, Sebastian Ogier won. It was his first time ever there. It's kind of, I don't know if it's by invitation. I think what it is, the manufacturers don't want to wreck the car before the actual WRC event, so they don't have everybody out there. So Sebastian Ogier ended up having the fastest time. What was also interesting to see is that Ott Tanak, so he was in a full-spec WRC car for he'll be in one of those for the Peugeot, for the Portugal round. he was only half a second slower than Ogier. So that was in the Ford. So that's pretty cool to see. And Danny Sordo ended up in third. He was about 2 seconds slower in the Hyundai. So the Hyundai is definitely showing some promise there.
Yeah.
So some exciting stuff there. The Fafe Rally Sprint. There's some videos. Maybe I should post one of the YouTubes of that on our site. Because, again, don't just look at from the driver's point of view. Look outside the window at the fans on the hillsides and lining the roads there. It's just crazy awesome how many people watch. You'd think they don't have any other sports in that country or something.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
That's good.
Yeah. With the upcoming Rally Portugal, there is apparently a little bit of a rules change coming out. Basically, they're saying that all drivers now will be eligible to score Power Stage points in Rally Portugal. What happened back in the previous events for the year, if you had to Rally 2, as they call it, or Super Rally, as we probably still more familiar to know it, that's when you wreck on one day and you can't finish for that day, but you can fix the car overnight, you get a huge amount of time penalties, and you can compete the next day. What they'll allow you to do now is score points in the power stage. They had taken that away earlier in the year, so not a huge change. That was allowed last year as well, so meh. No, I don't really see that as a big deal.
No, not at all.
Let's see here. Other things going on as we get ready for Rally Portugal. I've been kind of watching what's been going on as they've been prepping for the recce. They've been out there on the stages today trying to do their pace notes. And quite honestly, the teams have been looking to maybe outfit their cars with outboard boat motors to make it faster through the stages, because rain came down like you wouldn't believe. Torrential downpours flooding the stages, and what was a water crossing is not a creek. It is a full-on raging river.
Oh.
And, there's a number of pictures on Twitter and whatnot that have been posted of cars submarining, and that's something that thankfully the event itself, looking at the weather forecast, Thursday through the weekend is just going to be partly cloudy, and then the sun's supposed to come out, so the rain is supposed to pass. They did have to reschedule some of the recce for the stages because they were just impassable. Other than that, Portugal. This is back. This is the first of the regular, I guess you could say, rally stages. No longer the specialty events. You don't have the high and hot of Mexico. You don't have the snow round of Sweden. You don't have the mixed surface snow with studded tires / asphalt that you have at Monte Carlo. You now have your basic dirt gravel stages that are Portugal. Lots of blind crests. Obviously, with this rain, I'm guessing no dust issues. And the one thing that would be interesting to see how the stages hold up after this torrential downpour. Is it going to be really rutted? What kind of stuff is going to be washed into the stages maybe from the storms, punctures, that kind of deal? But it's hard to say that, Ogier won't come out on top.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he's just a phenomenon, isn't he?
Well, much like the guy whom he replaced, who was also a phenomenon of his time. So, yeah, it's a little
exactly
understandable. So,
So going into the rest of the event, though, I'm not sure who to pin into second and third place. Lavila, I think, will do okay. I think he'll end up maybe third. Second place, though, I'm thinking more like a Mads Osberg might end up there. He did really well there competing. He was right behind Ogier last year until he went a little bit wide and smacked his rear against the wall of a ledge and then rolled down a hillside. landing on a side road. And so that's
still rolling.
Yeah, no. Yeah, he didn't do a Latvala rolling deal, but yeah, you got to really watch out on those ones, right? I mean, out there in Portugal, yeah, there's some steep cliffs that just keep going.
It's a steep cliff, and there's nothing to save you from going off the side. There's not a fence. There's not even, like, a boulder. It's just, like, it's – you mess up. I mean, we're talking, like, Pike's Peak. You mess up, it's over with.
Yeah, yeah. There's some – you know, they got mostly a lot of, like, scrub brush kind of stuff off to the side, not a lot of trees. So once you go off, it's like, yeah, you're just kind of slowly slowing down, but you're still going. Eventually the car comes to a stop, but, you know. Yeah, so tune in. Should be a great event. I always like Portugal because, again, this is where you get the higher speeds. The cars are at full power. And I think it really sets the stage with what the rest of the season will look like. Mm-hmm. I'm especially excited to see how the Hyundai does with that event because they've done a lot of development just during the season even already. And you can already tell after that Fafe Rally Sprint how well it's doing. So. In other news, moving away a little bit kind of WRC related, but kind of not quite, in the Dakar, two-time WRC champion Carlos Sainz, who has been with Volkswagen for a number of years and helped in the development of the Polo WRC, he is actually leaving VW.
Oh, no.
He's leaving VW because Peugeot is coming back to the Dakar.
Oh, yes.
Exactly, right? So this is going to be cool. Mini BMW Group has dominated in mm-hmm. the Dakar the last few years. And Carlos has attempted to compete in other vehicles and just hasn't quite been all that competitive, and he's really wanted to be in something that can make it to the end. And if there's somebody that can do it, Peugeot seems like they can develop. I mean, heck, we've seen what happened to Pike's Peak when they put some money behind a car, right?
Yep.
So, you know, and with somebody like Carlos to help develop it, that's huge. On top of that, as another driver they've got, so this is so far at least a two-man team, they've got Cyril Dupre coming into the cars. Cyril Dupre has been in the motorcycles and just dominant in the motorcycle class of the Dakar. So Dupre is going to be moving on into the cars, and the combination of Sainz and Dupre should be very good. So.
Yeah, I look forward to watching that. That'll be fantastic stuff. He's like, I'm not going to get stuck out on those motorcycles anymore. It's a long walk, a heavy motorcycle.
You know, that's hard on you. And, you know, and Dupre, he's getting a little older. You know, you can see that, you know, after a time, you're like, you know what? Having a cab around me sounds kind of good.
Yep. It's like, I'll go ahead and pass.
Yeah.
Riding the old car, so that's good stuff. Good to see the Peugeot's coming back into the Dakar, and hopefully it's, I don't know, it's been kind of an all-VW show, so hopefully, you know, before too long we can see some good stuff out of Peugeot, and obviously Sainz, huge. Also, it's huge for VW, too, when you look at the fact that, you know, Sainz is, like, one of the leading guys who developed the Polo R that you see, mm-hmm. That's so dominant, you know. It's amazing to see, you know, him. He's taken that loyalty, basically, to another manufacturer. And, I mean, they've got so much to be thankful for. But at the same point in time, when your name is Carlos Sainz and you've done what he's done, I guess it overly doesn't matter, you know, what happens in the future. So good stuff there. Good stuff. So little Rally America. Wait, before we get into Rally America, we do have a kind of a regional rally in California, right?
Yeah, I was going to mention that because actually technically considered one of the smaller rounds that is part of Rally America in that respect. It's just one of the supporting events. And we do actually have some desert rallies. You know, I've been trying to keep track of some of the guys that I met at Oregon Trail last year. And one of those guys with Brentley Motorsports has a little Fiesta R2. And he he's from down in Southern California, and I've been looking at some of the rallies they do down there, and apparently they've got this Desert Storm rally. And it's just outside of Blythe, California. And honestly, Blythe, California, to describe it for you, I've driven a number of times down to see my grandparents that live outside of Mesa, Arizona, which is just outside of Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And driving from Oregon, you go south and basically hang a left, and Interstate 10 right off of Interstate 10 is where Blythe is. And the drive from pretty much Palm Springs to Phoenix is the straightest, boringest road you will ever be on in your entire life.
Oh my.
When you approach the town of Blythe, you're like, thank God, there's lights. There's actually a town. There's something here. Other than that, it's cactuses and sagebrush and nothing. I mean nothing. You get excited for a slight bend in the road.
Oh, nice.
So
those roads.
This is proper desert rallying they're going to be doing. It is out in the desert. So, so that's going on this weekend. It'll be exciting to see how well they do there. I'm going to see if I can find a way to follow it this weekend. Apparently, the MAV TV does a little bit of coverage of some of that stuff, but I don't get MAV TV because my cable company sucks.
Nice.
But I did want to give them a little bit of a plug because some of those regional rallies are really fun to watch. And if you're from Southern California and you got nothing to do, hey, run out there. It should be kind of cool.
I agree. Any kind of rally action is good rally action in my eyes.
That's right. And speaking of rally action this weekend, on the television should be the first event of the Rally America Championship. The Snowdrift Rally is going to finally be televised on TV. They had a little bit of a lag in timing because they want to compress them to where, you know, you don't have, because the events themselves are spaced apart, you know, by a couple of months. So they wanted to compress so that every month there's something that they can show. So the very first event is this Saturday at 2 o'clock on NBC Sports. Set your DVRs, please.
And we'll be done. So if not watched live, depends. If it's on Sunday, I will not be watching live. I will have to go back to the DVR because I will have my own racing. I will finally take
well,
Doug
it is
Patterson
April 5th, so it's Saturday, April 5th at 2 p.m.
Okay. Okay, so I will not be at the test in tune on Saturday, so I can watch it. I will have babysitting duty as the lady has the school Saturday, so her classes are on Saturday. So I will be at home to watch that, not at the test in tune with Doug, sadly. So I will be missing a little bit of seat time there, but I shall reclaim glory for Open Paddock and take back what is mine. Which he is holding for me, which is the championship.
Nice.
If nothing else, the Open Paddock Championship. And you ask, how do you plan on doing that? And I tell you exactly, I plan on doing it exactly the opposite of how I did that cute little video that he put up on the on the YouTube.
That was brilliant.
We talked about that on the way home because he stumbled onto it when we were sitting in the car just waiting, just kind of looking around at some of the video catches that we had made. And we had accidentally stumbled onto that clip where I had actually forgotten that I had done that. So it was a little embarrassing.
That you dropped the F-bomb and had killed the car not once but twice?
No F-bombs. It was just a poop bomb. It's just a dirty word for poop. That's all. Unfortunately, the thing with Doug's car is this. Okay, the Focus, for whatever reason, has this weird little the SVT has this weird like little BMW style transmission, which is probably as close to European as it gets. But the reverse is in the far left.
Yes, it is.
It's one of those.
Yes.
It's in a very odd position, and
so
he warned me when I got to drive that thing, and I totally agree.
Is it one of those weird ones where you also have to like push in and then go over on the
no,
side?
But I had one of those, but mine was over and up instead of it was right and up instead of left. So.
Yes, like the Fiat's. Like I drove the Fiat 500. the new Fiat 500s or whatever, and they've got like your typical
winning
Italian like transmission that you deal with. This, on the other hand, the SVT, it has the weird little BMW kind of all the way over where first gear should be. And now, granted, you know, I was driving her Jeep, and if you know anything about Jeeps, you know that their transmission is normal, where you pull reverse is all the way over on the right side.
Yep, like right and down. Car.
Yep, right and down. And that was not the way the Focus was. So I was trying to get the transmission into first, but I was afraid that if I pushed too hard, that I would put it in reverse. And
oh,
so
annoying.
When I went, so yeah, exactly. So when I went to start that run, that was the first run that I had done by myself that day because I refused to do the course walk because it was so cold outside that day. So I was like, I'm not walking the course. I was like, our first ride, we will take each other. That way the weight is fair and all that. And that way I can get a course walk because it was just too cold. It was 13. It felt like 13 degrees. Okay, so I'm not walking. I don't care. But I did. So the first run, I stalled the car out there. It was kind of embarrassing. I let the old shits bomb slip a little bit there, and that was my bad. But, you know, I didn't know what was happening. I thought Doug's Focus had broken. And if you've seen Doug's Focus, you know that that's not outside the realm of possibility. So I thought I had inherited a lemon. So I was like, what is happening? So, but
that is called grassroots. That's what the concept's like. It is grassroots.
It's the very definition. So, but anyways, Mike, let's enough about our racing this weekend. Talk about what you're going to be doing tomorrow that has to do our friends at the Global Rallycross, the Red Bull Global Rallycross, mind you, have offered you a trip. Well, you had to buy the plane ticket, which is fair.
Yeah.
But they've offered you like an all kind of inclusive visit on their media day on the 2nd of April in Los Angeles, California, and you, sir, are flying to Los Angeles for a day in Kim Block style, where you are like flying to LA for a day and then flying back to Oregon. It's crazy. I can't even fathom doing that. But you are going down there to see what is in store for the 2014 Global Rallycross Championship. Tell us about this trip and how badass this is going to be.
Well, you know, when somebody sends you an email and inviting you to come to a media event with the opportunity to sit in a 600-plus horsepower car, do you say no?
You can't say no, or you will immediately turn in your man card.
Exactly, right? You know, and when I got that email, I was shocked. I'm like, is this really meant for me? Really? Huh? What? And I approached my wife about this. I'm like, you know, I probably can't go, but I just want to tell you, this is what I got invited to, you know, kind of thing, kind of sheepish,
nice.
You know?
Yeah.
And what was awesome is how supportive she was. She's automatically like, if you can get the time off from work, I want you to do this. I know how much you love motorsports. And I'm like, I love you.
Oh, I know.
It was the awesomest thing ever.
It's like, it was never really any question, wink, wink, as to why we're married, but this just solidified the deal. Yeah.
Exactly. So I got this awesome opportunity, and, you know, it really sunk in when they sent me the follow-up email that said, by the way, what size driving suit do you wear?
You're like,
What was funny about that is, like, they sent it, and they're like, large, extra large, XXL, and I'm like, I'm only 5'6". Do you have a medium?
Do you have a tiny boy suit? I am a small kid.
To which they responded, are you really a motorsports journalist?
Oh, well said, sir. Well said.
That just can't be true.
Because I fit.
So, yes, Open Paddock has the opportunity to attend a special event for media. So I'll be down there with other media people, of course. And yeah, it starts in the morning. They're going to get us together to, you know, talk. I get to interview, some drivers, including, nice. Pikes Peak, multi-champion Reese Millen. I think Scott Speed's going to be there. Bucky Lasek, who's, you know, well known for his X Games exploits and is with, Team Subaru. Mitchell DeJong, who's the young guy who's been, he's done really well, like in the Torque series, of off-road, and he switched to doing the, GRC lights. And, so I get to talk to him about how the lights cars, what that championship's like. It's kind of the feeder into the supercars. And yeah, they get to top off the afternoon with a ride in a car. They're setting up a track. We're going to be located at the Port of Los Angeles, right overlooking the bay. And they're going to give us rides in cars and going to have some great video, hopefully, to give you guys to show. GoPro is one of their sponsors and is going to have cameras already mounted in the cars, so even though I've got a GoPro camera I'm probably going to take with me, they said that you can just bring memory chips, and they'll take care of that. And, you know, just a phenomenal opportunity to just be involved at that level, asking the questions, being kind of behind the scenes of the championship and what they expect from it. You know, I got a lot of questions I want to ask because this is something that's been in growth mode. It's not very often you get to be there at the beginning of a new series and how it's grown. And I've been following this Global Rallycross Championship stuff since its early days. Mm-hmm. It's had its speed bumps, you know. It's had its issues. Last year, we were laughing at the fact that an event with all-wheel drive rally cars got rained out, you know. Although that still happens even in the WRC. If you have flooding and you can't cross, you know, the stuff, that's understandable. But the fact that these, you know, these tracks that were built, you know, really quickly inside these stadiums for X Games, you know, didn't have the combination of both dirt and gravel, you know, as well as tarmac that, let's say, the European Championship has. And, you know, so a lot of comparison there. And I really wanted to know where they wanted to take this in the future. But now they've got Red Bull as their title sponsor for this year. You know, so there's definitely some money being thrown at it to change things. Their venues are changing. They're not going to be just at these NASCAR tracks where they're very limited on the track design. They're going to be able to do a little bit more. Two of their locations are, they actually have New York, New York as their location. Washington, D.C. is another location. I'm curious as to what the hell they're going to build in those two locations. But, you know, another, you know, more local to me is going to be, they're going to come up to Seattle area. Likely it'll be out by Dirtfish Rally School, which isn't where I saw one of the early, early days of the Global Rallycross Championship. It wasn't even called the GRC, I think, yet at that point. And like I said, I've really kind of see it grow and change, and I'll be excited to talk to the CEO, Colin Dine, about, you know, why he took such a risk on this new series and where he thinks he can take it into the future.
Oh, well, that's just going to be awesome, and we obviously want to thank everybody at Global Rallycross for thinking about us when they have their media day and sending that invite to you, and good on you for being involved and working with the series. So this is great stuff. I look forward to the coverage, huge, as you will be saying. You will be dropping poop bombs because you're about to hit a jump versus me dropping them because I stall the car. So you will actually be having a blast in one of the GRC cars, and I personally cannot wait to see the results of that. So good luck and be safe, obviously. We want to,
you know,
get
on
you
that
back.
Note about be safe, here's the funny thing. My wife was actually saying, gosh, you're going to be going down. Should I be worried? Because I, you know, I told her about, you know, the racing suit, you know, it's a fire suit and all that stuff. She's like, oh my God, should I be worried? I'm like, honey, okay, listen to me. I'm going to be in a car with a full roll cage, you know, and all these safety equipment. I'm going to be more, it's going to be more dangerous for me to drive to the airport than it is for me riding in this car.
Oh, yeah. I agree. It's going to be awesome. I mean, those rally cars are insanely built. So All right. Well, that's all we have for Rally this week. So thanks again. And man, I'm telling you, I cannot wait to see what comes out of that media day at LA. So stay tuned to Open Paddock. We will work with Mike in the coming week or so to get all of that stuff uploaded, time permitted, obviously. But now we move into the wonderful world of Formula One. And by wonderful, I mean full of just meh right now. And by meh, I'm not meaning mer, as in Mercedes, who's destroying everybody. I'm just saying kind of meh, as it's been an interesting couple weeks. We're finally back on track this week for Malaysia. Malaysia is always kind of one of those wild card events because you don't know if you're going to get a lot of rain or if you're going to get no rain, or are we going to get – I mean, obviously, we're always going to get super hot tires. You know, so what were we going to do on track?
What I was interested in is actually is how the engines were going to be able to, because this is the hottest location they will be in, the fact that it isn't just hot, it's hot and it's humid.
Mm-hmm.
And that is even harder to wick away any heat from these super complex, mechanical engines that they've got. And if there's somebody that's had a problem with the heat, you know, we know it's been the Renault engine.
Yeah, and as well, we always used to wonder with Mercedes, when it came to these hot tracks, was the tire wear situation always plagued Mercedes? They always seemed to have issues keeping the rear tires, from melting or from doing whatever it is, you know, the car design would have. So that's certainly one of the things that we are going to be watching. But right out of the gate in qualifying, as much as everything changes in Formula One, just like we said in IndyCar, things stay the same because Red Bull, man, Sebastian Vettel brought it when it came to Saturday qualifying. And by brought it, I mean he nearly put that car on pole position off of Lewis Hamilton's time there, and even Daniel Ricciardo, that we, obviously flying high after his second place and then last place finish, whatever you want to make of that for the fuel sensor issue, regardless, Ricciardo was right there in P5, so a good showing for Red Bull after everybody thought that the whole entire season had been lost. I mean, Vettel's still ahead of Alonso. Ricciardo's still ahead of Vettel. Or, I'm sorry, not Vettel, Raikkonen. So, interesting stuff in qualifying, and man, that Red Bull, they really have been burning the midnight oil back at the shop, I have a feeling.
Yeah, Sebastian Vettel referred to his team members, the mechanics, as a different breed of human because of the amount of time that they've been, working on this issue when they should be sleeping.
Oh my. That's, well, you know what? I'm all right with that. I like that. Different brand of humans. So what you're saying is Red Bull have gained an unfair advantage by employing cyborgs.
I think the exact quote was different species. So
that's awesome.
Very interesting. He has a different species working on his shit quiet car.
I started to say, I was like, this coming from the guy who said my car sounds like shit. I was like, I love this guy. That's so funny. So I was like, telling it like it is.
With this second event, I got more used to it, and it didn't bother me as much. Yeah, it's still definitely quieter. It doesn't have the sound it could.
Yeah.
Again, like I talked with Doug last week, I don't know if it's the RPM limit or if it's the fact that they're recovering some of the energy off of the exhaust gases that's preventing that sound. Because I mean, look at IndyCar; they're using a V6 turbo. It sounds fine.
Yeah, I think there's a few things going on. Number one, they've done sound studies on this, and a Formula One car from last year runs about 130 decibels. They're saying the Formula One cars this year are running about 120 decibels. Now, that's, you're on a logarithmic scale, so you're not just a little bit different. It's like
exponential.
So the intensity is like half of what it was before, but it's still a very high decibel number. It's in rock concert area as to the sound, but it's a different note, completely different note, and it just sounds different. I mean, I'll tell you, after watching Formula One last week and then IndyCar this week, far more satisfied with the note that you're getting off the IndyCar engine. Far more satisfied. But
you know, I was going to say the exact same thing. I was all right with the F1 engine until I heard the IndyCar engine, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's so much different.
Yeah.
And it sounds so much better than the F1 car. It's just ridiculous. And that's like, all bias aside, I mean, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody who would think the contrary.
Yeah, I guess the question is, as the season goes on, is the volume and is the sound of these engines as much of an issue as they're making it out to be? And we'll talk about that a little bit after we hit the Malaysian event, because I have some thoughts on it, and I'd like to kind of put it in its own spot.
Okay. Well, we can go ahead with the with the results of the race then. I mean, not much to really talk about in qualifying. I don't think there was anything that was too earth-shattering.
Yeah, the only thing in qualifying was it was changeable conditions during qualifying, so it made for some interesting banker laps and things like that. And Lewis Hamilton's pole lap was actually a banker lap.
Oh, wow. Well.
So, yeah, he basically said, I could have gone a lot faster, but that was just a banker lap. So
yeah. Wow.
But yeah,
how do you know you're screwed when Lewis Hamilton says that his pole time was a banker lap?
Yeah. Oof. Well, but the other side of that is I think everybody has to be looking over their shoulder at what Red Bull has been able to do, because talking about results, Lewis Hamilton, yeah, he was on pole. Sebastian Vettel surprisingly qualified second, and then when the race results were had, Sebastian Vettel finished on the podium in third. That is far more than we ever thought that this Red Bull was going to do in the first half of the season, because of this Renault issue that apparently they've solved.
Like, oh, don't worry, Renault, we've got it. Fixed your engine for you. We'll take care of it from here.
Here's the new blueprints for your engine. See that they're all fixed.
Yeah, exactly. You're welcome. What? Yeah, it's bad because, you know, when you're Mercedes, you're thinking, man, we're destroying people, and you know, nobody's even close, we're half a second clear, and then it happens, and then you start to peer over your shoulder after the second race, and you're like, what's he doing? How's he got there? And you're just like, oh, God. We were supposed to use this time to extend our championship lead as much as possible, and now we've got them like breathing down our necks already, and it wasn't supposed to be this way. This just wasn't supposed to be this way. I don't know how else to put it.
Things to highlight from the race. Vettel put some interesting moves on Rosberg on that opening start, and Rosberg called him out on the podium after the race during the podium interviews about it. Said, "Yeah, I think you're a little too close there." And Vettel played it off, but I think it was pretty clear what he was saying there. Don't freaking do that again.
Yeah, he didn't like it in the old shoomy squeeze into the pit wall.
Yeah,
a la Barrichello style.
Well, at some point, drivers are just going to keep going straight and, just risk the damage, because at some point, you can't give way to moronic moves like that.
No, I agree. I think that you just go, what was it they used to say that, that Ayrton Senna, when he would used to make passes on people, he put himself in a position where either you needed to move over so he could he could go through, or he was going to crash you.
Nice.
So he was, but the accident would be essentially he would put you into the position where the accident would be your fault. So you had a choice. You could either crash, or you could, you know, fight and play another day, essentially.
You could crash, or you could straight line the corner because it's your only viable option.
Exactly.
It really sucks to be Mark Webber. Daniel Ricciardo this season.
Hey. Yep.
Dude, he can't. He can't.
He got screwed again.
Yeah.
This time was more the team's issue though with the pit stop there. But yeah, that was really funny considering that the exact same thing pretty much happened to Mark Webber last year at the Malaysian round. So well, I was not surprised to see.
And that's why the penalties were so harsh. You know, when his wheel came off, they got him for unsafe release and a 10 grid penalty for the next race.
Oof. Oh man, double whammy, huh?
Yeah,
that's a double whammy.
Painful.
It's like so bad because the car never even made it on track.
Yeah,
like they stopped it in the pits.
They did stop it in the pits.
Yeah,
I guess the rule is the rule, but
the rule is the rule. But I mean, when these guys only got 3.5 seconds,
to do
this stuff, where is the time to say the word stop? Tell me when in your second and a half to get that tire on, and you realize it's not quite on. How do you even get the words out before the guy has not dropped the jack? They're not looking for cues. I'm sorry, these guys that are dropping that front jack. I see him stop with the gun. I'm just going to release because they got to do it quick.
You're right. They've got to. And and to add insult to injury, when they went to retrieve his car, which was missing a wheel, they sent a guy over the wall that didn't have a helmet on.
Oh, God.
So they got penalized for that as well. And again, that was a result of last year when the tire got loose and hit the camera guy. All of this comes from that, these harsh penalties, you know. So they got penalized for the camera guy and had to do, you know, penalties for that during the race. And then, you know, you've got a 10 grid penalty for after the race. Oh, my goodness. I mean, and you're right. He didn't do anything wrong. And if you look at last week, he didn't do anything wrong there either. He is definitively replacing Mark Webber at that team, and he has his luck.
You know, Ricard, he's been doing great driving. And, you know, and also to add further insult to injury, it got worse because when they brought him back in to put that tire back on the right way, they messed up his front wing.
Yeah.
And then he goes back out, and the darn thing, after just bumping over a curb, starts to fall off, then starts cutting into another tire and just...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, the poor guy. He just... Yeah, you're right. It was Webber's luck, wasn't it?
Yeah, indeed. And in the end, didn't he retire the car?
He did.
Yeah. Yeah. So
they were like, enough is enough. We're getting slaughtered.
This has gone too long.
Like, I'm afraid if we do another lap, we'll be disqualified for the next race for fuel flow issues that have yet to even be, an issue. So
yeah,
that's, I feel bad, but like they said on the Formula One post race show, the great thing about Daniel Ricciardo is the fact that even after that happened, like, he was not saying, woe is me, like, what, you know, the team screwed me over so hard. And, you know, I mean, because he could have been like, dude, what the hell are you guys doing back there? You know, but he's just like, you know what? We had great pace. The car is a lot better than what we thought. There are some things that I could do better. But here's all the positive kinds of things that I have, that we as a team have going for us at the moment that, you know, we never thought we were going to have at this point, if testing was any indicator. So, you know, that I think is a good quality for him. And I don't know if he'll be champion. I don't know. but I will ever, as long as he's on that team. But what I will say is that I am excited. He is as much garbage as I talked about him before and being like, oh, what a stupid hire when you have people like Raikkonen out there and everything. I mean, his attitude yet again shows why I don't own a Formula One team, because his attitude is like the difference maker there, where it's like, you know, that's refreshing to hear that even though you're having this horrendous start to the season, you know, you have still viewed the positives.
Well, the good attitude is one thing, but also, hey, he legitimately put his car on the podium in the first race.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and he wasn't a slouch in this one either. So I think it's safe to say that Red Bull has been vindicated in their pick.
Mm-hmm. I think so, after two races.
So, we shall see. Gentlemen, let me quote you a phrase from the race. Felipe, Velk is faster than you. Do you understand?
What a freaking
let him by. Right.
What a disaster if you're Felipe Massa. You know, you move over to this Williams team, and obviously, like, you know, say what you will about what Massa's done lately. Fact is this guy was world champion for 6 seconds and would have been world champion had it not been for the fact that, oh, what's his name?
Yarno.
What was it? Yarno Trulli, that little, I've got a couple words for him. Completely, you know, the whole tire scandal circa 2008, whatever you want to call it. The fact of the matter is this, Massa's a great driver. And you know what? He clearly views his time at Williams, he's the number one. Unfortunately, Williams don't know what they were thinking going into the championship, but they certainly did not see eye to eye with Mr. Massa at this race, because you're right, they nearly identically echoed the same thing that was said to him. Germany,
the last thing they should have said to him was almost a word for word copy of Felipe, Fernando is faster than you.
And then
seriously?
They're like, and then they're like, why is he not pulling over? I'm like, gee, let me think about it.
Pride?
Yeah, I was like, oh, I don't know. You just essentially pissed in his Wheaties. I wouldn't pull over for you either.
When he left Ferrari, as he was leaving Maranello, he stopped by the claims office and picked up his balls. They had been checked at the Ferrari for the duration of his stay. And he was unwilling to give those up when he checked in at Williams.
He's like, that will never happen again. And it was really funny, because the week leading up to the race, he had even said, he says, I am not like the servant boy. I am not the guy who's going to get out of the way when you come on and say, you know, we've got team orders. That's just not going to happen.
Well,
and what were they thinking by saying that? That's just like, and then that's almost like mocking him by then turning around and saying the same thing.
Well, the team's reasoning is, well, see, here's the deal. Felipe's car was having engine cooling issues, and he was having to kind of dip out of line when he was following Jenson Button. And clearly, he wasn't as fast as he could be if he didn't have those engine cooling issues. So Valtteri catches up, and the team says, hey, he's faster than you, let him by. And here's what we're thinking, but never really communicated to the drivers. We'll let Valtteri take a few stabs at getting past him, and if he can't, Valtteri will let you back by.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Multi-21, anyone?
Exactly. I was like, no, it's not multi-21. It's Martini 21 now.
Yeah. Jeez. yeah. Nice.
Earlier in the race, though, wasn't Massa trying to get past Bottas?
Well, they had some arguments earlier in the race where Bottas had, like, kind of essentially was Yeah, he was kind of doing the same, a same similar kind of situation, and that kind of had boiled over a little bit where Masa was like, you know, what is this guy thinking, basically venting some frustration about the way that Valtteri was driving him. And so that obviously, you know, kind of probably fed into it as well. But here's my thing. Like, if you – okay, so say Masa's having engine coolant issues and you want to have – Bottas take a stab at, you know, whomever it was that they were chasing. I think it was Button or Magnussen. I think it was one of them, one of the McLarens. Sorry. It was one of the McLarens. You know, if you want him to make that move, like, tell him, hey, Masa, your engine is like, your engine's like jacked up, bro. You need to like move over, let Valtteri go because you might have to retire the car if you keep pushing. And instead, they chose to communicate poorly and say this thing that they should never have said ever. If you wanted Felipe Massa to pull over and cooperate, then you do not say, hey, Felipe, Valtteri is faster than you. Da-da-da. So I think there are other ways to communicate that. I think there are other ways to communicate that than the way they did. So, but nice, good picture there. So, but anyways, well, shall we talk about the penalties, boys, the penalties after the race, or have we done that already?
One last thought on, we'll cover that, but one last thought on, Massa. Here's the deal. In the last two races, Massa alone has scored more points than Williams scored last year in each race.
Okay.
So two races in a row, Massa alone has scored more points than Williams had in the previous season. Don't you think it's a little inappropriate to be doing this whole team orders thing when really, really...
Yeah, who's your star driver here, right?
Exactly. Well, I mean, Bottas is good, don't get me wrong, and Bottas
sure,
has scored points
as well.
Sure,
but he's not Massa.
Well. He's not Massa, and dang it, don't do this so early in the season. I mean, what you possibly could have done is embittered Massa for the rest of his stay there. Mm-hmm. And you have this team meeting afterwards where really the team
apologizes.
The team needs to sit down and say, "Hey, we're really sorry. That was really stupid of us." But no, they're going to try and, you know, come up with some sort of reason. Well, we were going to let Valtteri past you, and then if Valtteri couldn't get past Button, then he was going to let you back by. Bull freaking crap. It's not going to happen that way. Nope. Anyway.
It was good. It was good to see. But I also said this on Twitter, last point on it, is this is a good problem for Williams when you've got two drivers who are hungry,
yeah,
who can finish, who can compete. Because you're looking at a team with Pastor Maldonado, who is a laughingstock, a joke, a complete sideshow of a program. It was a Pastor Maldonado thing, because if you look at Lotus now, who has taken on the Venezuelan dirtbag, they're just as bad as Williams was, I think, last year. So, you know, for Williams, this is a good thing to have two drivers who are so passionate, so spirited, and just really are pushing. And so amongst all the negativity that we can say and how silly it was that they did that to Felipe, which it was disrespectful to Felipe, this is a good thing for Williams and a good position for them to be in.
Yeah. Kevin Magnussen got a penalty after the race. Yeah.
That was obvious.
Yeah. Poor Kimmy.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see.
Guys still just getting used to how the braking systems work with these? Is that why they keep running into the back of people?
I don't think it's so much that. I think he just got. I just think he got a little. I think he just got a little excited.
First lap stuff.
Yeah,
but
you know.
But he ended up getting a 5-second stop and go penalty at one of his pit stops. For that contact, but they've also given him 2 points to his super license. Because once they get 12, they're out for a race. Bianchi also got 2 points on a super license for spinning past Maldonado on the first lap as well. So well, the FIA.
Is, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, nothing's wrong with that.
Because he's an ass clown anyways.
Nice. Do you know anybody named Jules, really?
No, I'm not talking about Bianchi. I'm talking about Maldonado as an ass clown. He deserves to get spun out.
Hey, but seriously, it's the best decision ever for him to move.
Oh, yeah. The Williams was terrible.
Best decision
Williams
ever.
He's so bad.
Because Lotus is so good this year.
He's so bad. He's like a cancer. Everywhere he goes, he just immediately weakens them to a state where they may as well be dead.
Yeah. Anyway, we've kind of covered the results, but kudos to Mercedes, Lewis Hamilton, and Nico Rosberg on the podium. Lewis was 17 seconds clear of Rosberg at the end of the race. Vettel was 25 seconds back at the end of the race. So, yeah. Fernando Alonso soldiered home for a fourth-place finish. Looks like another year of Ferrari basically being not very good and Fernando finishing, you know, fourth and fifth every race. Yeah. Other than that, Felipe Massa finished 7th, Bottas 8th, behind Jenson Button, and also behind Nico Hülkenberg and his Force India in 5th. Oh my goodness. How the world has changed.
It's a different place, man. Different place.
Yeah.
Different place, same things, just different team names.
Drivers' Championship standings, Nico Rosberg is at 25 points, Kevin Magnussen at 18, Jenson Button in 3rd at 15, Fernando at 12. Oh, how the world is changing. McLaren is ahead in the Constructors, followed by Mercedes and Ferrari in 3rd. And that would pretty much wrap up this race.
Nice. Yeah, Malaysia, I love the circuit. I love the circuit there. I love the atmosphere. I think it's really worked itself into the fabric that is the start of the Formula One season. Now we move on to Bahrain, which sucks.
Yeah.
Because the course is terrible. The environment is terrible. Nobody gives a damn unless you're like a rich oil sheik, which, despite popular belief, not everybody in that country is rich. It's woohoo, fun stuff. But Bahrain is next, and that's this weekend.
Indeed.
So that's interesting. I'm excited, I guess, that we get to at least have a race that doesn't suck this weekend, since IndyCar's on break. So I guess we do get to watch some Formula One, so I'm happy for that. So just a couple news topics here, and we're going to go quick because we've kind of bantered on a bit here. Chairman of the Australian Grand Prix, he's kind of pissed about the way that Formula One is going. He doesn't like the noise. It was actually a great, great article in the Herald Sun about it, or on Herald Sun's website anyways, where they were threatening to sue Formula One because of the engine noise, basically saying, hey, this isn't what we signed up for when we wanted Formula One, and if this is all we're going to get, then we may as well go to IndyCar. Bring an IndyCar to Melbourne. Now, obviously, that's not exactly what he meant. I think that he was using it more of a position of, hey, you will give us what we want, or we will go to IndyCar, basically. Yeah. And that never works out for anybody because Bernie's just as hard-headed as anybody else.
Well,
the
kicker is Bernie's on his side on this. Mm-hmm. And Bernie, as the the media rights holder's representative, he's been saying a long time that he didn't want these quieter engines, and he's made his case perfectly clear. Ron Walker and Bernie are great pals, and I put up an article about this past week. Yes, I put up an article.
I seriously was that you, dude. I seen F1 Soapbox, and I actually had wrote it off as being John.
Oh, no.
And it was actually you. I'm sorry.
I looked at it, and I went through, and I think my last article published was in 2012.
Oh, my God. Ladies and gentlemen, as you see, we clearly hold our people to a high standard of writing.
Indeed.
The articles I put up the last couple of days there before St. Pete were like the first ones that I had wrote in some time. So I'm trying to get back on the bandwagon, but dude, it's just so easy to come on here and talk about it and then just post it.
It's easy to rant, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I took the week off from the podcast and I needed to have an outlet, so
you know, I think that's the deal, right? If we take a week off, it's like, I don't have that outlet, so okay, fine, now I do have to write.
Yeah, but you do.
But you know, The funny thing is, you got Walker, who's, you know, making all these verbose claims about this. He says he's going to get the Formula One Promoters Association, which he started last year, and said they were all going to run IndyCar races, you know, instead of Formula One races because of the noise, which they perceived would be quiet. Then he's, you know, saying they're going to get together at Bahrain and figure out if they're going to sue and figure out if they're going to invite IndyCar and all this kind of stuff. And then he throws out, yeah, and we could run an IndyCar race for $3.5 million. And I would have to say that is never going to happen for that amount.
No. Ever.
15 to 20 million. Well, 15 to 20 million was the price point that we heard for them going to Brazil. And that's in the same hemisphere.
Well, it's just one of those things. It's like you got to pay the team and people. I mean, not everybody is rich.
$3.5 million might get the equipment there. Might. And you're not even talking about paying the teams for showing up because none of the sponsors translate.
Right.
So $3.5 million, I think you're looking at maybe $15 to $20 million to bring IndyCar. So that comment doesn't hold much water. So really there's something else going on here. He's just making a lot of noise to try and offset the amount of noise that wasn't there. But the problem is when you start doing those sorts of things, you're kind of devaluing your event because you're saying it wasn't very loud. I don't like it this way. And, we could go with IndyCar for $3.5 million, and the government there goes, well, you mean we don't have to pay $50 million to F1? Done, sold, we're done. That contract is up for renewal after next year's F1 race. So, signs point to being a tough time to get that one signed. Other than the question I have, Ron Walker and Bernie are great friends. So maybe this is more Ron saying what Bernie wants him to say to try and deflect people's eyeballs off of the fact that Bernie goes to court next month. Maybe that has more to do with it. And then Bernie this past weekend said, we would like a little more noise, but you know what? This sounds great in person.
You obviously haven't been to the racetrack. You don't even know, bro. It sounds epic.
Well, yeah, because he did go to Australia and he made all kinds of nasty noises about Australia, and then he does show up at this past weekend and says, "This is okay, maybe a little louder." Okay, whatever.
It was interesting to hear Lewis Hamilton himself say that the loudest noise actually that he's got right now is the sound of the wind going past his helmet. Versus the engines now.
Yeah.
Well, I heard one of the McLarens take off out of the pit box, and when he got on the accelerator, I actually heard the tires peel out.
Oh, yeah. They got the torque.
Which I had never heard that before. Obviously the wheels are spinning, but you never hear it over the loud RPM of the engine. On this one, I was like, is there... I'm like, oh, that's weak. I'm like, come on. I was like, you're not supposed to do that. So
I think it was maybe it was Button or somebody, I can't remember, but one of them had said something along the lines of, well, you know, at least I'll have my hearing for a few more years.
Yeah, indeed.
I'm not complaining. Okay, well touche.
Jensen also had a fun little comment about this whole thing because some of the drivers are making far more noise than the cars do about how much noise the cars don't make.
Right.
So Jensen's comment regarding that is basically those drivers should go and race something else.
Except for when you talk that one of the guys who said that also is 4 times world champion and handed you your ass on a platter.
Yeah, there's that. There's that.
4 times in a row, yes.
Yeah, I don't think that you can tell him that. Maybe if it's somebody like, I don't know, Felipe Massa. Who's just at the ass end of everything this week. If you might be able to get away with telling him something like that, but I don't think you can say that to 4 times champion who destroyed you.
Yeah, so. Well. It is kind of fun to listen to all of this, because in the end, about a month and a half from now, it's not even going to be an issue. We're not going to be talking about noise in Formula One. It's going to become, these cars are high tech and we like the sound of this new Formula One. It's gonna come about, and you'll still have the people saying, well, the 12s were better. Of course they were.
Yeah, that's like saying Group B was better when we had Group B. It's like, well, no shit. Next.
Yeah. You know, what's funny about that, though, is that, you know, from a technical standpoint, the Group B cars were significantly slower than the cars of today.
And that's what they were saying with the with last year's cars. Is like, our cars, the new cars, are, like, slower, but in a straight line, I think they said they were something like they were actually faster in a straight line than what the old car was, the big engine.
They accelerate faster, and they have faster straight line speeds, but they don't have as much downforce because they took like 30% off of the car. So obviously, you're not going to go as fast, especially in the corners. So
yeah, I was going to say, if they increase the aero, then the cars would be as fast as they were last year, or significantly faster, maybe even, because they'd have that the ability to turn at faster speeds.
And really, you know what? The glory days of pole speeds and lap times being the best they ever were, those days are long gone, because the FIA is rigorously mandating that these speeds don't go too crazy. Cars getting too fast, groove tires.
Can you say restrictor plates?
Pretty much.
You know? I mean, V12s, it's the same kind of concept,
V10s,
right?
V10s, V8s, groove tires, aero changes and constant reductions of the amount of downforce allowed, the size of the wings, all that kind of stuff. It's been a constant process. And what it is these engineers are figuring out how to go really fast with the formula they're given, and the FIA has to change the formula so they don't get going too fast. By the end of this season, we're going to have very similar lap times to what we had last year.
I believe it, so... all right. Well, what else do we have here? Also in our news segment here for Formula One is, that's it.
Nope. We're done.
Bahrain is it. I'm sorry. Yeah, we are done. So look at me. I'm
still hungover from the weekend.
Yeah, that's still right. still recovering from the six pack. So. But, yeah, that's all we have for this week. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Stay tuned to the website. Obviously, we got a lot of great stuff coming up out of Mike Shaw this week for Global Rallycross. We will be keeping you attuned to all the news that may come out of IndyCar, as well as we will continue to monitor Formula One. We probably won't write about Formula One, but we'll continue to monitor the situation there. So, but I'd like to say thanks to everybody for listening again, and I guess we'll see you all next week. Say good night, boys.
Good night.
Woohoo!
Mm-hmm.